Greetings, welcome, bienvenidos, hola, aloha, ni hao, namaste, konnichiwa, bonjour, buongiorno, sawadee karup, guten tak, jia wivi va kat bang, half a day, jai jinendra, salam, shalom, peace, now, go vegan, peace how, go vegan. From the left coast of the unlabeled, genetically mutated, McNugget Pharmaceutical Vivisection Prison, Kilitary Industrial Poor Nation, in the cheese-covered post-constitutional, bankster-bankrupt, corruptocracy, mockracy, criminocracy of the United States of Listeria, foodborne in the NSA, NRA, USA, home of Uncle Salmonella, where they sure do eat a lot of dead animal body parts, and the Wall Street-backed corporate diet of death, disease, and destruction is shoved down your throat. This is Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden.
By the time we got to Woodstock, we were half a million strong.
Be 46 years ago this weekend that Woodstock happened? Hard to believe. I was there. I was there. That was a life-changing experience. Well, it seems like just yesterday that three friends and I drove up to Yasgur's farm, not really expecting to be joined by 399,997 other friends. We were peace activists and music enthusiasts, and we really didn't realize how many of us there were until we gathered in one place. I was one of the few people who actually bought a ticket. I think it was maybe $7.50, and I'd be rich today if I didn't lose that ticket in some closet in an apartment in San Antonio when I lived there. But anyway, but if you look carefully at the movie Woodstock, 43 minutes into it, I'm the guy with the long hair and the beard at the gate complaining that, hey, no fair, you can't let all the people in for free, I bought a ticket, wait, no fair. Anyway, so what was most special about Woodstock was the sense of community, actually. The music actually became secondary. We were covered in mud, and everybody was sharing everything. I remember we were riding, to get around. We'd be standing on the floorboard of a Volkswagen Bug, you know, holding hands across the roof. That's how we were getting around there. But it was, really exciting just to be in a community of flower power, love generation peace activists with strength in numbers, huh? Wouldn't it be great if the peace activists of today, vegans, would gather in numbers in one place and celebrate and grow the peace activism movement of today, which is veganism? We didn't quite know it back then. Peace begins with your plate. We didn't quite have a handle on that at that time, that being vegan is a foundation of peace activism. But the idea did sprout back then with the hippies in California and the San Francisco Bay Area, which they were being led by Stephen Gaskin. He was interviewed on this program. You can hear that interview if you go to the archives at goveganradio.com. September 1st, 2007, Stephen Gaskin of the hippie movement. He passed away recently. He was a guest on the show. The hippies did come to the conclusion, as he said it, that eating animals isn't cool. It's a basic tenet of peace activists. Eating animals, dairy, eggs isn't cool. And eventually the hippies moved to Tennessee and formed The Farm and created wonderful vegan foods, including vegan ice cream back then. And the peace activists of today, the vegans, are invited to attend. I guess we can make it the 21st Century Woodstock, right? The World Vegan Summit and Expo next July 29th, 30th, and 31st, where the hippies were in the San Francisco Bay Area. The summit will take place on the campus of the University of California in Berkeley, an area that was a hotbed of activism back in the Woodstock era. And it's time to rekindle a peace revolution with a vegan world, and how do we get to that vegan world? Well, we start with a Vegan World Summit and Expo. Peace through vegan education and vegan activism. It's the only way to attain peace, as Tolstoy, author of War and Peace, said. As long as there are slaughterhouses, there will be battlefields. And so it's not surprising that the great peace activists of our day would be vegan. Peace mom Cindy Sheehan, Dennis Kucinich, Cesar Chavez was 100% vegan. And as we know, wars are fought over resources like oil and water and land, all diminishing resources now, mainly because of animal agriculture. We are told by the President of the United States that climate change is the greatest threat to national security. And we are told by the world's top climate specialists that we need a population shift. 50 to 85% of those currently consuming so-called livestock products need to go vegan by 2020. That's the only way that we can save the planet from climate change before it's too late. That's what they say. I'm just quoting. So if you're not vegan, of course, you are part of the problem, and you don't have to feel blamed. Just take responsibility and go vegan today. You can do it today. It's something you can do right this very moment. No muss, no fuss, no waiting for schemes from government and politicians and corporations. We'll never get any results from them. We all need to go vegan. You can do your part today and encourage others to go vegan, too. So, I mean, that's actually why it's so frustrating that those who have assumed the mantle of, responsibility, environmental responsibility, responsibility to the animals, would abdicate their positions. As, it's really very depressing. Those who claim to be environmental organizations, like 350.org, Sierra Club, Greenpeace, those who claim to be animal advocacy organizations like HSUS, Farm Sanctuary, Mercy for Animals, Compassion Over Killing, Farm, are really total failures when it comes to this, pretty much because, I guess they're sellouts. I guess that's what it comes down to. Last week we talked about the pathetic organization, FARM, so arrogant that it, it organizes a so-called animal rights conference, let's call it ARCON, and then it has the gall to induct an egg salesman who works for the rancher advocacy group HSUS, Humane Society of the United States, into the Animal Rights Hall of Fame. This guy, Josh Balk, makes deals for the sales of hundreds of millions of eggs, and he's in the Animal Rights Hall of Fame. Really, kind of lowering the bar for next year. One could argue that perhaps, maybe Ted Nugent could be inducted into the Animal Rights Hall of Fame. Compared to hundreds of millions of eggs. Or maybe next year, a farm could induct Michael Vick. After all, he too has been a spokesperson for HSUS. And the number of animals that he harmed compared to hundreds of millions of eggs. Well, I guess basically anybody who's not an egg salesman could be inducted next year into the Animal Rights Hall of Fame, just based on not being an egg salesman. Joe Maxwell, HSUS Vice President of Pig Killing, he sells the bacon to go with the eggs. He could be inducted. Or Michael Vick. I always bet on the one associated with HSUS, And FARM, in organizing ARCON, a gathering of cons to con the public, FARM just continues to perpetuate a conspiracy against animals that, it's so shameful, presenting anti-vegan animal betrayal specialists as the leaders of a so-called animal rights movement is really sickening. The main groups who are center stage at ARCon, HSUS Farm Sanctuary, Mercy for Animals, COK, Compassion Over Killing, Farm, all participated in the largest betrayal of animals ever by their, reversing their positions against cruel, modified, furnished, enriched battery cages, and then campaigning for those battery cages. You know, it's so sad that, these... these people motivated by purse strings, tear at the heartstrings of people who really care about animals and want to help them. And they've come to hear the wisdom of people who have really failed. In this upside down backward society, we so often see the cream of the crap rise to the top. Well, just... look at who runs for president. You get someone like Hillary Clinton. What about her? What about your vote for the war in Iraq, Hillary Clinton? She says, I made a mistake. Oops, hundreds of thousands of people died for your mistake. But that's okay. Well, we'll overlook that and give you the opportunity to make more life and death mistakes. That total lunatic Alan Savory presented himself as an environmental expert, and his actions resulted in the murder of tens of thousands of elephants, about which he now says, oops, I made a mistake. But now I know the real solution to climate change. He says, more animal agriculture. Like, who would buy that insanity? Well, why, Fibbin Bill McKibben, the meat eater, of course, of 350.org. Crazy world in which we live. Hope Ohanek was instrumental in influencing indefensive animals to make the wrong decision to support enriched battery cages, telling the world that now hens would be able to engage in natural behaviors in those battery cages, those warehouses. So she said, whoops, I made a mistake. So she gets hired by United Poultry Concerns. So particularly disturbing in the HSUS farm system of animal betrayal is farm sanctuary. People treat all of these groups as if they're animal protection organizations only because they say they are, and people generally believe them and, just follow orders. Today we're against these battery cages, tomorrow we're for the battery cages. Okay. Am I hearing the music? No, okay. So I am hearing the music. I have to take a break. I want to continue on this with Farm Sanctuary. We have Tim Barford coming up today of the Vegan Society in the UK, and Professor Francione coming up just after the bottom of the hour. Remember, it was a year ago now that they had a contentious discussion. Let's see what progress we've made, and we'll continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. Song and celebration and a lot of great discussions at the World Vegan Summit and Expo next July in the Bay Area, in the spirit of Woodstock, where we all need to get together for the cause of animals and the environment and human health. Go to worldvegansummit.com. I'm talking today about why would I consider Farm Sanctuary to be the worst sanctuary in America, mainly because Farm Sanctuary plays such a major role in the betrayal of animals. It's really, I hate to break the news to you, but, well, Farm Sanctuary also has the props. It has the animals whom it can exhibit, who make it seem like it's a champion for the animals, and, then it's really a sellout as much as the other groups, whether Gene Bauer goes on the Jon Stewart show or... Chris Hedges writes a complimentary piece motivated by his newfound vegan enthusiasm. Chris Hedges, as a war correspondent and political writer, is well aware of the need for suspicion, of corruption and betrayal there. But, maybe in his naivete in vegan advocacy, you know, in his newness to it, he doesn't suspect those around him to be guilty of the same. Well, Farm Sanctuary, of course, had multiple speaking engagements at AR Con. Years ago, when I spoke expressing my concern for the animal rights movement and its partnership with the egg industry and support for battery cages, my talk was officially condemned. I was chastised for criticizing other groups. Then when Professor Gary Francione spoke at ARCon the following year, he was told that his subject matter would not be welcome there anymore. But if you plot against animals, if you ridicule veganism, hey, here's a round of applause for you. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage the Senior Manager for Engagement and Outreach for Farm Sanctuary, Mr. Matt Ball. So what does Mr. Ball have to say at ARCon 2015 a couple of weeks ago in his talk? Understanding the Numbers for Better Advocacy was the name of his talk, and he opens by saying, quote, "Welcome and thanks for coming. If I say anything that seems like a criticism or a judgment, it isn't meant to be. It isn't meant that way. I've made many mistakes in my life, mistakes that have actively hurt our efforts on behalf of animals." Well, now there's a qualification to be hired as a senior manager at Farm. Mr. Ball, we are hiring a senior manager for engagement and outreach right now here at Farm Sanctuary. What would you say your greatest accomplishments and qualifications are for this position? I've made many mistakes in my life, mistakes that have actively hurt our efforts on behalf of animals. Well, you are hired, Mr. Ball, so now go out there for the team. Play ball. Play ball with, Josh Balk. Balk, everybody's a pitch man for whatever this movement is. Okay, so after that resume highlight, Ball goes on to say, "We are all fortunate. There has been so much research of late that can guide our efforts to help animals as much as possible." Oh, I hope he's not about to make more mistakes. Please don't be making more mistakes, Mr. Ball. Anyway, so Ball goes on to quote Nick Cooney from Veganomics, saying, quote, he's saying that people who buy humane animal products eat less meat than the average American. They are also more likely to go vegetarian. I'm not really understanding all of this. Well, maybe the direct quote. Direct quote. "Consumers who were willing to pay more for humane products," whatever those are, "were more likely than the general public to be willing to go vegetarian or semi-vegetarian." Okay, that's the end of the quote. Okay, great. "People who bought free-range meat tended to eat less meat overall." So buy that free-range meat. Okay. Then Ball, enthralled with something called the Humane League Labs, says, "The Humane League Labs specifically pointed out that we should not focus on dairy. Dairy is by far the hardest animal product for people to remove from their diet. Vegan advocacy may want to refrain from encouraging people to eliminate dairy." Now there's real dedication to the cause of liberation, right? You know, I'm following, the Black Lives Matter movement. I was watching a talk the other day, and they were saying how in the slaveholding days that actually the 19-year-old black male was the most valued and, oddly enough, least valued today. So would we, in trying to abolish slavery, say, you know, it's too hard to get the slave owners to give up the 19-year-old black male, so forget about them. Well, maybe the 60-year-old black women. See if I can continue a little bit with what Ball was saying, and then we will talk to Tim Barford in the UK and Gary Francione coming up on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linton. continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com, on Twitter at Go Vegan Radio, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden on Facebook, and register now for the World Vegan Summit and Expo, the Woodstock of the 21st century, next July in the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area. You can go to worldvegansummit.com. It will be nothing like ARCon. So I think I'll pick up next week with Matt Ball's presentation at the ARCon 2015, his totally anti-vegan presentation there. Apparently, this radio program is guilty of what he says. This show is reinforcing people's stereotype, and we're trying to build the smallest, angriest, most exclusive club in the world. Yes, we angry vegans. I wasn't angry until I read Matt Ball's piece, you know, what he presented at ARCon. And also next week, you know, we'll continue with why Farm Sanctuary is probably America's worst animal sanctuary. Next week, behind closed doors, plotting the torture and death of animals, Gene Bauer of Farm Sanctuary, and what other groups were involved. Tune in next week. Well, and we'll get to it next week, because it wouldn't be fair to my guest in the UK. I mean, it's almost 2 in the morning where Tim Barford is. Tim with the Vegan Society in the UK, and Professor Gary Francione on the line with us. Has it been a year already that we first all met on air and yelled and screamed at each other and then made up? And
time flies.
Time flies. Well, that's what I'm saying. I was at Woodstock. How could that have been 46 years ago?
No, it is frightening, isn't it, Bob? We're getting old.
Wow.
Yeah, well, it was a year ago. I guess it was a year ago in which we had that rather spirited discussion. And I'm glad to see that that things are changing. But you know what? I always knew that it was in Barford's heart. I knew that.
So. And what's been changing? How are you doing, Tim? How are you?
I'm really good, thanks, Bob. Hi, Gary. Thanks for having me back on. Really nice to be back on, indeed. Yes, a year on already. Incredible.
Yeah. So what has been changing? Professor Francione refers to some changes. What's going on? What's new?
Yeah, I mean, in the world of VegFest and Tim Barford, there's certainly been some changes. And probably the biggest change since this time last year is I've developed a rights perspective, and that's come through loud and clear now in the VegFest work. And interestingly, I was looking back and listening to some of our chats last year, indeed the second conversation, which was really good. It was full of really good stuff. But there was a clear difference, and there was clearly no rights perspective from myself. And in the last 6 months especially, that's something that I've really been finding all about. And I think, you know, for our movement globally, it's really important that vegans develop a perspective of, you know, what animal rights really means.
So what do you mean specifically? Like what does that mean that you've developed a rights perspective?
Well, it means I can see these issues that we talk about from the perspective of the rights of a group of living beings that have been subjected to gross violations of their rights. And I never really saw any of this stuff from the perspective of that, you know, having some rights. And that's something, you know, like last year I didn't know what a single issue campaign was. I'd never heard of any kind of arguments about welfare and rights. I didn't know what abolitionist vegan approach meant. And I didn't really have a concept of rights. I had a really strong concept of what it was to be vegan, but not really from an animal's point of view. And I think it's fair to say that animals in the whole vegan argument, you know, are not always at the center. And I think for vegans, some kind of rights perspective almost now defines vegan. Because there's all this other stuff out there. You know, you can be veganish, or you can be flexitarian, or you can be meat reducing, or you can be vegetarian, or you can be whatever, you know. But if you're vegan, that means something.
Yeah, I think we're trying to redefine that. I think
you respect the rights of animals.
Mm-hmm. I think we are trying to redefine that, because we look at what happens at, you know, a so-called animal rights conference a couple of weeks ago, where, you know, an egg salesman is elected to the Animal Rights Hall of Fame, and you really have to wonder what's going on. You go to his page, and he's all excited that this group is going to buy hundreds of millions of cage-free eggs, and you know, it's really, we do need to separate ourselves, and, you know, so what do you think, Professor Francione?
Well, I'm delighted, because the reality is Tim has emerged as a significant person in the animal movement, and the VegFest events are significant events. They draw lots and lots of people. And so if the message that is coming out of VegFest is an unequivocal rights message, veganism is a moral baseline, that if animals matter at all morally, the one thing that's clear is you got to stop eating them, wearing them, and using them. If that message gets out, given the numbers of people that attend those events all over the place, that these things are they're becoming massive events, I think it has the potential to do an enormous amount of good, and I think it can really help shift the paradigm. And just as I was frustrated when I thought VegFest was sending out the wrong message, because it was affecting a lot of people and getting people to believe that all of this happy exploitation stuff was appropriate, I'm now happy that Tim is moving in a different direction. Now, obviously, you know, there's still going to be those people participating in VegFest, and I don't expect that to end. But I am happy that at least there'll be different voices now, and that stuff will be challenged, because I think that's the really important thing. We've got to challenge it. And one of the problems is that the abolitionist perspective, the rights perspective, gets mischaracterized, it gets denigrated. And you see it all over the place. I mean, you know, I was just reading, somebody just sent me, I wasn't even aware of it, but someone sent me an essay that was published in the New York Times today from James McWilliams, in which he accuses me of not wanting to help animals now, and, you know, and sort of being abstract and philosophical about it, as if, I don't know whether he's intentionally trying to mischaracterize my position or if he really doesn't understand my critique of welfareism and why welfareism and single-issue campaigns can't work. So, look, I think...
Which don't help animals now either, you know what I mean? That's a fantasy, right?
So. Welfareism not only doesn't help animals now, but it actually pushes things back. You know, I was talking to a friend of mine from Britain, and she said that she used to... I guess an acquaintance, this is not somebody who's a friend, but an acquaintance who said she used to rescue hens from batteries when they were, you know, when the farmers got rid of them. She would rescue them, and she had them in her backyard, and now she doesn't do that anymore because they've gotten rid of batteries. And I said, well, you know, what are you talking about? You know, I mean, this is the thing, is that the European community shifts to enriched cages. And everybody's getting, you know, really excited about that, and they're saying, "Well, the battery, you know, the days of battery cages are over," and that's just nonsense.
Enriched cages are battery cages.
Right,
hello,
exactly.
You know.
Enriched cages. What I really love is there's a great. It's fascinating that Compassion in World Farming, one of the most insidiously welfareist nonsense organizations on the planet, issued a report some years ago when a number of people were promoting enriched cages. They said, oh no, enriched cages are terrible. They don't address any of the welfare concerns that we have about battery cages. And now Compassion in World Farming is busy giving awards to people. And they've joined, you know, just like HSUS, just like all these groups have, they're now on the bandwagon saying in rich cages, you know, real step forward, blah, blah, blah. It's nonsense. It's complete nonsense. But this is the shell game. This is the, you know, this is when you're trying to sell compassion, when it's a product and you're trying to sell it, you end up selling the animal short. So I think what Tim Barford is doing is, you know, is has the potential to really, really be a game changer. You know, he's got an influence with a lot of young people, and I think it's a game changer.
And you're going to be there this year, aren't you, Professor Francio?
I am indeed. Never thought that. Look, a year ago, if you had asked me a year ago, what are the chances that you're going to be at VegFest? The answer would have been a snowball has a better chance of not melting in hell. And so, you know, and I was, I'm just delighted. I mean, what can I say? I'm delighted. And I'm, you know, I know there are going to be people there who disagree with me, and that's fine. I'm happy to engage everyone as long as they're civil, as long as they're, you know, as long as it's a civil discussion. I engage people all the time. That's what I do for a living. And so I'm happy to do that, and I'm glad that those people are going to be there. And I hope that they will be able to, you know, to articulate what it is, why they think I'm wrong, other than telling me I'm wrong, which they all do. I would like them to tell me why I am wrong. So, you know, it'll be good. And I think it'll educate people. And I'm hoping that VegFest is going to continue to go in this direction, because I'll say again, I'm excited about it. It's a potential game changer of significant proportion.
Well, maybe I can go next year if I can figure out a way to take Daisy. So,
well, I mean...
Yeah, well, I mean, just on that note, Gary, Bob, you know, it's great, and I'm really grateful that you accepted the invitation to come over. The idea, you know, it has caused a few raised eyebrows this end. You know, a few of my colleagues have been surprised, perhaps, that you're coming to VegFest.
Well, hold on a second, Tim. Really, Tim, we'll continue the discussion. We have to take a break, and we'll continue the discussion with Tim Barford in the UK, planning VegFest, and Professor Gary Francione on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. Is Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com, on Twitter at Go Vegan Radio, Facebook Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, and worldvegansummit.com. Join us there. Tim Barford is in the UK, and you have VegFest coming up when?
Yeah, we've got the VegFest October 10th, 11th, and on the 11th is the People's Vegan Activist Summit. In part inspired by your own summit, Bob, which I'm absolutely thrilled to see you've got going on again next year. And it's a chance, really, to get everybody that we can under one roof. We've got some leading activists from around the globe with different approaches, and a really superb conference facilities at Olympia in the West End of London. And it's a chance, as Gary was saying, to try and engage on a peaceful level, on a polite, respectful level, whereby people listen to each other and we try and break down some of what is being discussed into manageable chunks, and try and inspire, you know, younger activists especially, but also activists of all age. It doesn't really matter on your age. It's about perhaps where you are with your vegan education. We're focusing on trying to educate pre-vegans, but we're now also focusing on educating ourselves and making sure that people who are vegan have got access to good information and a good level of engagement, so they can formulate their own views. It's really important that we have a social justice movement that is going to challenge itself. And I think the way we deliver criticism and the way we receive criticism is essential to the way this movement goes forward. And I think all of us all over the world, you know, we've got a lot to learn about the way we engage with each other. And I think, you know, if we can raise that level of engagement to whereby we can listen and respond in a real dignified, clear way, then I think that's really going to help. So that's what I'm hoping to see come out of this summit, is a really good level of engagement.
Oh, that's so encouraging.
I'm hoping that as well. But one thing I think, you know, I think a lot of the pushback that you're getting about the fact that I'm going to be there is, you've got to remember, these groups all use welfare reform campaigns and single issue campaigns. These are vehicles for donations, and so a built-in incentive for people to resist any sort of critique of them. I mean, one of the things I'm going to do is I'm busy doing sort of a graphic that I'm going to use, a PowerPoint, in which I'm going to try to explain to people about how welfare reform campaigns and single issue campaigns involve building coalitions. They involve coalitions which necessarily cater to the lowest common denominator. So, you know, you're trying to put a coalition together of people who are opposing gestation crates. Well, you're going to have a lot of people in that coalition who not only eat meat, but eat pork. They just think the gestation crate is a bad idea. And so the campaign against gestation crates has to morally promote, as a morally good thing, the consumption of pork that is not produced in crates. And that's the problem. That is basically one of
This is true, Gary. You know, I've since I looked at it, especially your presentation from the World Vegan Summit in March, really opened up my eyes to welfare, and especially, you know, the way that a little bit of an improvement in standards means then, of course, a bigger rise in price. So it's effectively a con. But I think it's really clear to distinguish in the UK especially that, you know, some of the animal groups are as bad as you say, in my opinion. Some of them don't have any vegan ethos. They, in fact, some of them reject the vegan ethos. They think it's divisive. They think it's extreme. They think it's going to put their donors out of touch. And, you know, for a number of reasons, they reject the vegan ethos. They also practice single-issue campaigns that are filled with xenophobia. And, you know, all the problems that you've highlighted about single-issue campaigns.
Hang on, Tim. We need to take another break. We'll continue our discussion with Tim Barford in the UK and Professor Gary Francione on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Hey, if you want to see those talks from the summit, go to youtube.com/goveganradio. Welcome to the second hour of Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. We are live Sundays, 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Pacific Time, syndicated by the Genesis Communications Network, inexplicably broadcasting now for over 14 years, as heard on the Air America Radio Network and CBS and Clear Channel radio stations. And the archives are at goveganradio.com. As I mentioned, we talked to the leader of the hippies, you know, this being the anniversary of Woodstock, Stephen Gaskin, 8 years ago on this program, and how they decided to go vegan because, hey, they realized eating animals wasn't cool. So you can hear that interview. Stephen Gaskin, September 1st, 8 years ago, 2007. So we're talking to Professor Gary Francione and Tim Barford, who is in the UK organizing VegFest, which will be in London in October. And let's see, before the break. So Tim was saying that his eyes were opened by some of the presentations by Professor Francione from the first World Vegan Summit and Expo, which was in LA in March. And if you want to see those presentations, whatever we were able to salvage, you can go to youtube.com/goveganradio. And if you want to join us for our second event, go to worldvegansummit.com. It's next July in the San Francisco Bay Area. And our first event apparently inspired some sort of vegan summit programming that you're putting on there, Tim.
Yeah, that's right. And I was just responding really to about how Gary, you know, has put his finger on, I think, a really relevant problem. But I just wanted to also back that up and clarify that, you know, in my opinion, though, and many people in the UK, there's a big difference between some of these groups that, you know, do not have a vegan ethos, and then you've got some of these groups that do. Now, groups like Viva and Animal Aid have got some of the most developed vegan education resources on the planet. They are getting people through the vegan door at the rate of thousands. And they got like over 90% success rates of helping people not only go vegan, but then stay vegan. And yes, they do use single issue campaigns. And yes, there are some welfare reforms. But both groups have a really clear, strong vegan ethos. All the people in the groups there that work there are vegan. I see Gary, and this is something I think, you know, I'm really interested, and I'm really interested in what's going to come out of this debate that we're having, you know, the big debate, single issue campaigns. Are they taking the movement forward or backwards? And Gary and our other guest, Marcus Drake, they'll be, you know, quite clearly in the latter camp, think they're taking them backwards. And our esteemed guest, Tony Walder from Viva, and Victoria Iceman from the Canine Angels will be, you know, proposing why they think single-issue campaigns are good. And Gary, I'm fascinated. I just can't wait. It's like box office stuff. I can't wait to see not just the actual debate, but also other people's opinions on the Facebook page afterwards. And whether we start seeing some kind of middle ground where we see some of these animal groups that are really, like, really shine the way in vegan education. And then perhaps that also shows up some of those groups that are not focusing on vegan education. And for those groups, they're the ones that we want to work with and try and help them a bit more. So, you know, people like Hunt's Abs, League Against Cruel Sports, these are groups that already have really strong vegan ethos. And we love our six in this country. You know, I mean, we do everywhere, but it's like soccer ball. You know, you can't keep us away from it. We just adore them. We love single issue campaigns. It's part of our culture protesters. So it seems to me we've got to try and work with these groups and help them develop some really clear vegan education and a vegan ethos. That's where I'm coming from.
You know, look, I'm not in any way questioning the sincerity of people. As a matter of fact, I remember many years ago when Viva first started, Anna and I had dinner with Julia Gladley, and I think Tony was there as well. It was probably 1993, 90. It was a long time ago. And I was in Britain doing a speaking tour about the rights versus welfare position. And, you know, she and I and Tony, I believe it was Tony, who we had a very, very interesting discussion at a restaurant in Brighton. And she was totally on board with the rights versus welfare distinction, that we had to be rights, we couldn't promote welfare. And now I look at Viva and I look at Animal Aid, and these are organizations. Yeah, they do talk about veganism in the same way that PETA does, in the same way that Mercy for Animals does, and groups like that. But they're they're still promoting, they're still sending out a very confused message. And I think that in a lot of ways, you know, they're doing some significant harm, and not doing as good as they could be doing, and not being as conscientious to the message of justice for animals. I mean, I think the message of veganism has got to be a clear and unequivocal, and I don't see it as clear and unequivocal in either of those groups. But again, I'm not questioning their sincerity. I just think they're wrong. You know?
Well, I can see what you're saying. I do agree about the unequivocal vegan bit. I mean, the vegan, the vision that our vegan, you know, founders, when you think about the people like Donna Watson and the original founders of the vegan concept, you know, they came out of the Second World War. And the whole vegan vision was so much more than just like, you know, your diet. You know, it really was. It was a most far-reaching vegan vision that, you know, we've come up with yet, and especially coming out of the Second World War, you know, and I agree. I think that we have, as a movement, in some ways, moved away from the ethics and the rights, and I think there's a lot of reasons for that. I'm not going to go into them. I'm certainly not an expert, and we could be here for sort of several radio shows, indeed, talking about maybe why that's the case or not. But what I do think is where we are now, it is important to make sure that the rights and ethics position of the vegan lifestyle is clearly understood, and the importance of keeping that as the central core tenet of veganism. And I think, you know, it's a valid criticism that some of the groups have, including ourselves, you know, moved away from that a bit. And once you start going down that kind of all veganish road, you know, it's a slippery slope. And then you realize there's
never been a vegan movement, you know. Then when you step back and take a look, there's an
element of that. But I would still say, and I think you'll see more about vegan Viva and Animal Aid. I think Viva and Animal Aid in my book, I mean, look, they're not perfect, of course not, you know, but they got really intelligent, dedicated, wonderful people who are really, really dedicated to the vegan thing.
I'm not doing
what they think's right, and I think they are open to some critique, but I think it's really important to make sure that we thoroughly understand all of it. And I'm not suggesting you don't, Gary. I'm just saying that between us, all of us, we should always really have a really close look at each individual group and not just look for the mistakes, because mistakes happen, but look at their ethos.
In my opinion,
Viva and Animal Aid especially have a really clear, strong, not only clear and strong, but very effective. And that's the key word here too, is that Viva and Animal Aid, I think, are really effective.
Let me just focus for a second, Tim, on Viva. You go to their page, and the tab at the top talks about reducing the amount of meat you eat or going veg. And reducing the amount of meat you eat is presented, and going veg, which is ambiguous, is presented as a morally acceptable thing to do.
I would agree with you that if people are promoting vegetarian or flexitarian, you know, that is problematical and questionable. However, what I would say is, from everything I see of Viva, like, they've got this new 48-page glossy A4 wonderful magazine, 100,000 of them coming out that are going to get free, given away at all the events in the next year, and it's called It's Time to Go Vegan. And it's loud and clear. All their recipes are always vegan. All their school talks are always vegan. All their health talks are always vegan. Everything they do is always vegan. However, I would agree with you that if there's any kind of confusing message coming out that, oh, well, you know, veggie or flexi or meat reducing, you know, that that can be problematical. And I would support moves from all our groups to become 100% clear about vegan ethos and vegan objective. But I also recognize that each group is made up of individuals, and it's those individuals who must make these decisions and move their ships in the way they think fit. I don't think it's right to question their integrity. It is right to question the effectiveness of groups.
And yeah, I mean, I'm looking.
Groups
I'm looking
should at the, be prepared for critique. You know,
I'm looking at the Viva page right now, Tim, and right at the top it says,
okay,
change your diet. Go veggie/vegan or eat less meat. I think that sends the wrong message. Look at their big campaign against foie gras. You know, that sends out the message very clearly that foie gras is morally more odious than any other animal product, than any other meat or dairy or egg. And you know, and this is in my judgment really problematic. I understand that those campaigns bring in donations. I mean, I've been doing this now for 30 years. I worked with a lot of groups in the 1980s. I know the way it works. But I also think it's wrong, and it's sending out the wrong message. And, you know, and look, I also understand that not just Britain, but the rest of the world is addicted to these single-issue campaigns. Tell me one instance where a single-issue campaign has resulted in eradicating any pervasive practice at all.
Okay, on that note, we must take a break. We will continue our discussion with Tim Barford in the UK and Professor Gary Francione. You can register now for the next World Vegan Summit. Go to worldvegansummit.com next July in the Bay Area. Continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com, on Twitter at GoVeganRadio, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden on Facebook. And we are not responsible for all of the network commercials that run during the program, so don't yell at me. I get people accusing me of all sorts of things, that I have dairy sponsors of the World Vegan Summit. You know, we can catch things and we can ask and, you know, whatever, but not always responsible.
I listen to those ads, and I want to, you know, I mean, I hear them. I want to commit suicide. I mean, it's like, you know, I'm drinking contaminated water. You know, I don't have money invested in gold and silver. I don't have a survivalist kit. I mean, I'm in big trouble.
Well, you're listening too closely. Be like most listeners. So we continue our discussion now. So, I'm wondering, by the way, Tim Barford in the UK organizing VegFest in October in London. By the way, is Paul Shapiro invited to speak at the event? I'm just wondering if, is anybody from HSUS invited? I'm just curious.
Paul was invited. Paul accepted, but then he had to cancel later on. With some family reasons. And we very much hope to have him back next year. We think it's a very interesting.
Oh, then I want to be there next year. I want to be there next year. Please. Put me down for next year.
I've been following the HSUS thing. I have to say at this point that, you know, I know very, very little about it.
Well, I
do think that, you know, certainly, we don't really have that in the UK. I mean, look, some of the groups, I think there's a big danger in partnering up and giving medals to, you know, we've really looked at closely our own awards. We do awards. And you know, we used to have, like, sort of veggie vegan cafes up for awards. You know, we don't have that now because we don't agree that, you know, whereas we want to work with people to help them go vegan, And we would also always work with a business that's veggie, wants to go vegan, and, you know, is trying to work along that way. We're not going to give them awards, you know, for...
I can't see any justification for inviting the Humane Society of the United States to participate in any animal function.
That's actually an interesting question because, you know, rights violations. Can you have people who subscribe to the violation of rights now as a tactic to prevent violation of rights in the future?
But they're the ones violating the rights with knives themselves. They're part of the meat industry.
I don't agree with that approach. I can see why. I can understand some of the... in inverted commas, logic behind it, and I can see some of the effectiveness of it, but I can see, you know, like Gary, you were pointing out that you see a lot of problems in single-issue campaigns. I do too, but I see what you're on about, of course, but I also think that, you know, there's single-issue campaigns that are, like, as it were, less problematical than others, and I think, you know, they can be shaped... And this is where, you know, I'm really, really looking forward to engagement and debate.
I guess I wasn't so much shaped to be vegan
and to be, you know, to be exploiting animals as a tactic to achieve less exploitation is a confused tactic, I would agree. It's a scary tactic. But I might stand corrected, and I'm not saying I know a lot. One of the things I think is really important is that we should, as activists globally, you know, learn and debate and look at these issues seriously.
I think that there needs to be a look at differentiating groups who are supposed protection, animal protection groups from the industry itself. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, HSUS is the meat industry, and I don't know, you know, what more you have to do to disqualify yourself. You know, giving out discount coupons for bacon. You know, having a pig farmer vice president. At what point do you stop being an animal advocacy group only because you say you are, you know, or, you know, and realize that you are the meat industry? We have to take a break again. We will continue with Professor Gary Francione and Tim Barford on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com, on Twitter at goveganradio, and Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden on Facebook. And you can register now for the World Vegan Summit and Expo. Go to worldvegansummit.com. Our thanks to Vegetarian House for support. Actually, Vegetarian House made the first donation toward acquiring the venue for the first World Vegan Summit and Expo this past March in Los Angeles. And we're happy to be in the Bay Area next July with the event. And that's where Vegetarian House is, one of the best vegan restaurants in the world, 100% vegan, organic. Check out the expansive menu at vegetarianhouse.us. If you are in the Bay Area, you have an event coming up, a business event, a social event, you're getting married, and you want the food to be great, Vegetarian House caters. So one of the best vegan restaurants in the world, Vegetarian House. When you come out to the summit next year, there are so many wonderful vegan restaurants around the Bay Area. So plan on doing a tour and include Vegetarian House, which is at 520 East Santa Clara Street in San Jose. We're talking to Professor Gary Francione and Tim Barford with the Vegan Society in the UK, which is presenting its Veg Fest in October. And, before I forget, Tim, we had an issue come up a few weeks ago on the show. I was talking to Adrian Ling of Plamil Foods.
And Adrian, yes. Lovely fella.
Yeah. So there's an issue. If I were to go look at a food label, you have a trademark that tells me something is vegan, right? So you have the little vegan symbol that could be on a food label. But your symbol can appear on a food label that also says may contain milk, eggs, and fish. So what am I to believe? I'm looking for purity here.
Well, that's a valid point. I mean, I know Adrian. I mean, Adrian's father, Arthur, who I was lucky enough to meet, was the guy who I think actually pioneered soy milk. You know, he was one of the early vegans I was referring to earlier. He's passed on now, but a lovely, lovely fella. And Adrian, his son, has took on the firm. And, I've got massive respect for Adrian. He's a brilliant, brilliant guy, and he's supported VegFest and a lot of other grassroots activities. But I am aware that, quite a few years ago now, I think probably eight years ago or something, the Vegan Society trademark and Adrian had a dispute or some differences, I believe. And Adrian, I believe, you know, his products are produced in a 100% free from animal product environment. I don't think there's ever been any animal product of any sort at the Plamil factory since it opened in the 60s, you know, or quite a while back. So his factory and anything he produces is 100% vegan. There's never any question of that. With the Vegan Society, and I'm not a specialist on this area, but the trademark goes out to a number of people whose product is vegan. But a few years ago, and indeed recently again in the UK, the labelling laws have changed, allergy warnings especially. And now anything that has got any kind of possible tiny contaminant, because, you know, there's a shared factory, that has to now label, you know, may contain a trace of these ingredients for allergy reasons. And yeah, that's an issue.
Well, there recently the FDA here.
We most vegan people, you know, look, we're not in a vegan world. I wish every factory was like Adrian's and always had been. But and in the future that will happen. But and indeed now it is happening. But where there's vegan products being manufactured by vegan people with a vegan ethos that may contain a tiny contaminant, that I think, you know, I think it's currently very hard to do much about that. But I haven't listened to Adrian's
argument,
so I should get myself educated, really.
And recently there were cases with the FDA in the U.S. where the FDA was pretty much saying, when you see on the warning label that it says may contain, treat it like it does contain, because that's,
I think that depends on the standards, you know. I mean, look, I'm not an expert in the food hygiene industry, but
dairy in particular
is used, I don't see that there's a contamination risk beyond.
Well, there is.
But I think Adrian would say otherwise. I don't quite currently see, you know, a way around it. What I can say is that the Vegan Society, of which I've only been a trustee for a couple of months, so I'm like a novice. I'm not anything to do officially with the Vegan Society until 2 months ago, when I became elected to be a trustee, which is an enormous privilege. I'm very grateful for that role. The Vegan Society is a medium sized charity. It's got 25 employees, and it's got some really, really good people in it. It's got a lovely set of new trustees, 12 people, really good talent. Some incredible input available, And
okay, well, I'm just suggesting
principles of veganism. And this will come through in the next year or so. I think you'll really see the vegan society blossom and grow. There will be mistakes, of course. It's a charity, and it's been sometimes very under-resourced. It's run on goodwill and a shoestring.
Okay. Well, that's just an area.
I'd like to make a suggestion to you as a trustee of the Vegan Society. One of the issues I've had with them over the years, I've had several, but one of the issues I've had is, from what I can tell, unless things have changed recently, they basically rely completely on self-reporting. So if somebody says, it's vegan, they don't do any sort of inspections. They don't do any spot inspections. They don't do any sort of random inspections. It's all based on self-reporting. I think that's a very, very dangerous way to certify things. It concerns me. I hope that one of the things that the Vegan Society will do is to start having checking on people who have the label to do surprise inspections and things like that to make sure it is represented.
I also run a hemp business, and I've been a trademark holder with the Vegan Society for a number of years, and I'm also organic certified. Now, the organic certification does involve inspections, and it is more thorough. However, it's also a lot more expensive. So the Vegan Society could indeed raise the level of their inspection or their criteria to a level of something similar to the organic inspections, which are covered by law. You know, the organic certification in this country is, and indeed in America and well all over the world, is enshrined in law. The vegan thing is less so. So it is challenging. And there's a case of funding, there's a case of practicalities, and I'm not saying that...
I say err on the side of purity.
But yeah, there's an issue of purity. But, you know, you have to also look at the way the Vegan Society has evolved. And the Vegan Society, as I mentioned, has evolved with goodwill, some incredibly devoted, talented people, but often not enough. And sometimes overwhelmed and overworked, you know. And,
sure.
and it has to be said that, you know, this last year has really taken a toll on the Vegan Society. We've lost four good people. And the level of morale in the Vegan Society, you know, kind of is really good now, you know. But it was really challenging last year, of course, you know. And you've got, you've got people who are new with a lot of enthusiasm coming in, and they're regularly, they're shot down in flames. And it has a... This is a really problematical, not just for the Vegan Society, but for all charities and all groups, you know. Where they should never be above critique, but critique should always be respectful.
I don't know whether you knew, but, you know, I was actually banned from there.
And it should be with some compassion.
I was banned from the Vegan Society for raising the issue of the fact that they were taking paid advertisements for non-vegan places, restaurants, and products in their magazine. And I raised it with the, you know, I there was a discussion forum, and I raised it, and I said, you know, I think this is a really bad idea. They shouldn't be taking paid adverts for, Land Creek, it was some place in the Lake District that served dairy products, and they had this, you know, this haven of peace and tranquility. Well, not for the animals who are being exploited for their dairy products and eggs. And I made this point, and I got banned. I got banned from the Vegan Society.
I don't want to go too much into detail because, you know, it's I don't want to, you know, talk too much about stuff I don't know about. But I think, again, I want to refer this to a bigger picture. It's not always the message. It's the way the message is delivered. And it's a challenge for all of us to raise that level. We need to raise our game here, you know? Anybody listening?
No, but Tim, if you have a vegan society...
To be heard. You know, your ideas are too good to be lost in the stuff. You know, we all need to sharpen our tools, and we need to engage with each other in a way that not only delivers a message, but also ensures that people who are the message is delivered to get a chance, you know, to listen and to consider and to show some respect to those people, you know.
Well, but Tim, I'd be happy to share this with you. But I actually wrote them a memo. I gave them a real plan for dealing with, you know, a policy. I suggested a policy. Never even got a response. I asked for a response several times. Never even got a response.
Well, Gary,
when you have a vegan,
these guys are really overworked and overwhelmed a lot of the time and under-resourced. And if sometimes responses are made, you know, maybe who knows? But I would certainly love to work with you on all our groups. You know, I mean, I don't officially represent the others, but they're all friends of mine, and I think. Since our radio show last year, and you know, I've been on animal rights zone a lot. I've been reading and debating with people like Carolyn Bailey and Roger Yates, Jordan Wyatt from New Zealand. These activists have really helped me and others develop a really clear perspective of rights.
Time for a break. We'll continue. We have a few more minutes left with Professor Francione and Tim Barford in the UK. We'll continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com, on Twitter at goveganradio, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden on Facebook, and register now for the World Vegan Summit and Expo at worldvegansummit.com next July in the San Francisco Bay Area on the campus of UC Berkeley. Thanks for support from Selectee. Go to the website Selectee, SEELECT. TEA.com. Check out all the organic teas, 38 organic teas, 56 flavored teas, and instant tea blends, formulas, Ruby Burst, Rooibos, and black teas and green teas, and just Select Tea. Well, the name is Tea. 25% off tea right now from Select Tea, and also naturesflavors.com, naturesflavors.com, with thousands of vegan products, including Bertie and Bill's organic sodas and vegan baking mixes, essential oils. Well, thousands of products, so check it out, naturesflavors.com. Just have a couple of minutes left with Professor Gary Francione and Tim Barford in the UK with VegFest. So what's the website for VegFest, and tell us how people can attend or be involved. Tim?
Okay, thanks, Bob. Yeah, the VegFest website is for this one is london.vegfest.co.uk, and it's on October the 10th to 11th at Olympia. You can get tickets, they're £10 in advance, plus a small booking fee. So I think it works out about £12 in all. But they're on buy one, get one free for a while. And they're flying out. We've done extraordinary amounts. Ticket sales are like way and above. They're like about three times ahead, you know, way and above what they were. There's a massive interest. And what we've done is we separate that a little bit. We've got Health Summit on one day. With quite a lot of health experts looking at research. And you know, aimed at health professionals as well as you know, people interested in being vegan or staying vegan or finding out more about, you know, vegan optimum health. And then on Sunday it's the summit. And Gary, I'm thrilled. You know, you're our keynote speaker. I think you're doing two keynote talks, and then you're doing the debate. And there's also a session for question and answers with Gary. And then the book signings too. You're signing the books too. So anybody wants to come along, you know, you're very welcome. It really is. It's a good day out. I'm thrilled that we're hosting not just Gary, but, you know, like some really good people. If you've got an abolitionist approach, you know, you'll be very thrilled to hear that one of Gary's moderators, Kate Fitzgibbon is going to be there. Also, the Grumpy Old Vegans are going to be there. Marcus Dredge, that I mentioned before. So there's a really clear abolitionist approach. And I would really invite, you know, any activist to read up and understand the abolitionist approach. Not saying everybody agrees with all of it, or, you know, that's not the case of the point here. The point is to read up and engage and understand. And I think, Gary, I set you one of your most challenging tasks ever, to condense the abolitionist approach into less than 200 words and 6 bullet points for our flyer, which you did really, really well.
I did it, Tim.
It's a lovely flyer. There's a lovely little pocket-sized 16-page flyer that we produced together.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
it's lovely.
It gives, you know, a really clear understanding to the abolitionist approach. And following on from last year, you know, like, I've met now some of the people who were, like, really critical of the Vegan Society last year, and some of our abolitionist colleagues, and, you know, lovely, lovely. We sit down and talk stuff through. I really believe in, you know, uniting our cause and, you know, joining together. I'm really big on that. Yeah, I'm kind of big tent guy, you know, and I want to see all of us come in under this. And
well, not too big,
together.
Not too big, not too big.
It's challenging. It's tough. But
oh, it's very challenging. Very challenging. But we'll see. I'm looking forward to it, and I'm looking forward to having those discussions. And I want to leave you both with one thought. I was reading. Anna and I are researching.
Quickly, just a few seconds.
We'll have to talk about the anti-slavery movement next week. We'll talk about it next week.
Okay, all right. We will continue. Thank you. Thanks, Tim. Thanks for being with us. Thank you, Professor Francione.
Good luck, everybody. Big love to all the global vegan activists.
Thank you so much. Okay, register now. WorldVeganSummit.com, coming next July to the Bay Area. Go Vegan Radio. Go Vegan.